This morning, Brother Philip has a thought stirring in his mind and heart that he's been pondering and preparing to share. And so we're looking forward to hear what Brother Philip has to say this morning. You come ahead if you would and share what the Lord has laid on your heart.
I appreciated what Brother Nathan said on watch night, mentioning about different characters in the Bible. He was talking about Joseph. How someone, you know, looks at something in Joseph's life and pulls something from that, and someone else sees something else, and so you pull different things out. But as long as it harmonizes with the rest of the Bible, it's all good and proper uses of the examples. In studying the journeyings of the children of Israel through the wilderness, there were some things that stood out to me about the story of Balaam. So we're going to be mostly in Numbers chapter 22 and the following chapters. But there were some things that stood out to me about Balaam. So I want to talk this morning about lessons from Balaam. Other people may see other things in Balaam and take other things from that. This is not necessarily a dictionary on Balaam. It's just lessons that I saw that stood out to me, and I said, you know, there's some weight there. There's some things to think about. I'm going to start our first reading in Revelation chapter 2, verse 14, just the one verse there. In the letter to Pergamos, Jesus says, "But I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed unto idols, and to commit fornication." So I want to keep that in mind as a starting point as we get into the story of Balaam, where Balaam is going. So Numbers chapter 22, we'll start in verse 1. "And the children of Israel set forward and pitched in the plains of Moab, on this side of Jordan by Jericho. And Balak the son of Zippor saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites. And Moab was sore afraid of the people, because they were many. And Moab was distressed because of the children of Israel. Now this was needless, because God had told the children of Israel not to mess with Moab. He said, 'I'm not going to give you their land, because I've given that to the children of Lot.' But Moab didn't know this, and Moab's worried about it. But like I said, needlessly. Obviously, then, Israel has done nothing to provoke hostility. And Moab said unto the elders of Midian, 'Now shall this company lick up all that are round about us, as the ox licketh up grass of the field.' And Balak the son of Zippor was king of the Moabites at that time. And he sent messengers therefore to Balaam the son of Beor to Pethor, which is by the river of the land of the children of his people, to call him, saying, 'Behold, there is a people come out from Egypt. Behold, they cover the face of the earth, and they abide over against me. Come now, therefore, I pray thee, and curse me this people, for they are too mighty for me. Peradventure I shall prevail, that we may smite them, and that I may drive them out of the land. For I want that he whom thou blessest is blessed, and he whom thou cursest is cursed.'" Notice there that Balaam has a reputation. This reputation isn't just something that came up suddenly, but obviously there had been some time and there was some interaction, that some events that proved this to be true. "And the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the rewards of divination in their hand, and they came unto Balaam and spake unto him the words of Balak, and he said unto them, 'Lodge here this night, and I will bring you word again as the Lord shall speak unto me.' And the princes of Moab abode with Balaam." Now, Balaam has access or some sort of relationship with God here to where he can tell these princes, abide here tonight and I'll bring you word. And we find that God does come and talk to Balaam. And God came unto Balaam and said, what men are these with thee? And Balaam said unto God, Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent unto me, saying, behold, there is a people come out of Egypt, which covereth the face of the earth. Come now, curse me them, peradventure I shall be able to overcome them and drive them out. So let's stop there and take a little bit of a look at this people. This people that Balak wants Balaam to come curse. The children of Israel. So God, in Genesis chapter 12, he talks to Abraham. Now the Lord had said unto Abraham, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee and curse him that curseth thee. And then in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. And in chapter 13, the Lord said unto Abraham, this 13 verse 14, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise and walk through the land in the length of it and the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. And if we back up in Genesis chapter 3, after Adam and Eve had sinned, God says in verse 14, the Lord God said unto the serpent, because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle, and above every beast of the field. Upon thy belly shalt thou go, and dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life. And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed, and it shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. And so God has promised a seed would come from the woman. God has gave promise to Abraham that through him all the families of the earth would be blessed. And God has promised land to Abraham's descendants. And God said, I will bless those that bless you and curse him that curses you. Now this is the people that's come up out of Egypt, and Balak wants Balaam to come curse them. Continuing on in verse 12. And God said unto Balaam, thou shalt not go with them, thou shalt not curse the people, for they are blessed. Okay, God is working on something here. He's got something big going on. This people is a part of them, of that, and he does not want them cursed. They're blessed. And Balaam rose up in the morning and said unto the princes of Balak, get you into your land, for the Lord refuses to give me leave to go with you. Now it's interesting. Balaam didn't say, get you into your land, for this is a blessed people. God gave Balaam a reason for why this people was not to be cursed. Balaam did not pass that on to the princes. Instead, he puts the blame on God. God refuses to let me go. And it's interesting the way he words it there. He didn't say, God doesn't want me to go. I don't want to go because God doesn't want me to go. It's God refuses to let me go. And the princes of Moab rose up, and they went unto Balak and said, Balaam refuses to come with us. So they passed the favor along. Instead of putting the blame on God, they put the blame on Balaam. And Balak sent yet again princes more and more honorable than they. And they came to Balaam and said unto him, thus saith Balak the son of Zippor, let nothing, I pray thee, hinder thee from coming unto me. For I will promote thee unto very great honor, and will do whatsoever thou sayest unto me. Come therefore, I pray thee, and curse me this people. Now, Balak is assuming that Balaam's God is like his God. Actually, the one in charge is the priest. If you can persuade the priest, the God will do anything. Balak does not see God, or Balaam's God, as being the God who doesn't change, as being the God who lives by, or who operates by principle. But he believes if he can persuade Balaam, Balaam will come and curse these people. Balaam answered and said unto the servants of God, if Balak would give me his house full of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the word of the Lord my God to do less or more. Now therefore I pray thee, tarry ye also here this night, that I may know what the Lord will say unto me more. And God came unto Balaam at night and said unto him, If the men come to call thee, rise up and go with them. But yet the word which I shall say unto thee, that shalt thou do. And Balaam rose up in the morning and saddled his ass and went with the princes of Moab. It says nothing about them coming to call him. God placed a condition. Balaam did what God said without the condition. And God's anger was kindled because he went. God's not whimsical. The condition was important. God sees Balaam is eager to go. Why? Obviously, Balaam's heart is not in tune with God. And so God doesn't one minute give permission and the next minute decide, no, that was a mistake, I don't want him to go, and he's angry. No, God gave a condition, and he sees Balaam's eagerness to go. Balaam was, he didn't really want to break God's word, but he'd bend it. Okay, well, that means you're not really in tune with the end goal.
Right.
And the angel of the Lord stood in the way for an adversary against him. Now he was riding upon his ass, and his two servants were with him. And the ass saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way, and his sword drawn in his hand. And the ass turned aside out of the way and went into the field. And Balaam smote the ass to turn her into the way. But the angel of the Lord stood in the path of the vineyards, a wall being on this side and a wall on that side. And when the ass saw the angel of the Lord, she thrust herself unto the wall and crushed Balaam's foot against the wall. And he smote her again. And the angel of the Lord went farther and stood in a narrow place, where was no way to turn either to the right hand or to the left. When the ass saw the angel of the Lord, she fell down under Balaam, and Balaam's anger was kindled, and he smote the ass with a staff. The Lord opened the mouth of the ass, and she said unto Balaam, what have I done unto thee that thou hast smitten me these three times? Balaam said unto the ass, because thou hast mocked me, I would there were a sword in mine hand, for now I would kill thee. And the ass said unto Balaam, am not I thine ass upon which thou hast ridden ever since I was thine unto this day? Was I ever wont to do so unto thee? And he said, nay. Now consider the testimony of this ass. This ass's master has just admitted, you've never mocked me. You've never done me wrong since the day you were mine. What's Balaam doing? Balaam's mocking God.
Right.
Balaam said, I can't go beyond the word of the Lord to do less or more. And then he goes without the condition being met. Did the princes of Moab know about the condition? No. As far as they know, Balaam is still the man of God. He's still the man that who he blesses is blessed and who he curses is cursed. But Balaam's not following God. Balaam's being a hypocrite. He's mocking God. He's being worse than a donkey. Think about that. You'd be worse than your dog or your cow. Worse than a dumb animal. What is Balaam doing? I'm going to look just a little bit in 2 Peter. There's something about Balaam I want to read. 2 Peter, it starts in talking about false prophets, but 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 9, it says, "The Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptation." Does Balaam think that he is going to get a reward for going to Balak and not doing what Balak wants? Does Balaam think that God is going to be pleased with him if he does what Balak wants? This is a no good situation. Why would you do that? Okay, why is he going to Balak? If he doesn't curse this people, Balak's not going to be happy. If he curses this people, God's not going to be happy. The best thing for you to do is tell the princes to go home and stay where you're at. But you're going to go see Balak. Oh, then there's going to be even more pressure. Then you've got Balak to face. You've got more princes. You've got the reward is closer. He's walking right into a temptation God would have spared him from. God said, the first time he said, don't go. He gave him a reason not to go. The second time God said, go if this condition is met. And that condition wasn't met and he went. He went for why? Just because he wanted to be tempted more? But he's walking into temptation. The Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations, and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. But chiefly them that walk after the flesh in the lust of uncleanness and despise government. Presumptuous are they, self-willed. They're not afraid to speak evil of dignities. Going down, verse 12. But these as natural brute beasts. And 13, shall receive the reward of unrighteousness as they that count it pleasure to riot in the daytime. Spots they are and blemishes, sporting themselves with their own deceivings while they feast with you. Now this is written to churches. This is talking about people in the church. This is talking about people like Balaam. People who had... Balaam had a reputation. He had a testimony. He had a connection with God. Having eyes full of adultery. Now that is spiritual adultery. In other words, unfaithfulness to God. That cannot cease from sin. Beguiling unstable souls. And heart they have exercised with covetous practices. Balaam is claiming to be God's prophet. He says he can't do less or more than what God says, but he's not being faithful to God. Spiritual adultery. And heart they have exercised with covetous practices. He really wanted that reward. Verse 15, which have forsaken the right way and are gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. Why is he going? Because he coveted that reward. He wanted what was offered. And this was getting him a little closer to it. A little closer to what God said no to. Why would you do that to yourself? But he wanted it. But was rebuked for his iniquity, the dumb ass speaking with man's voice forbade the madness of the prophet. The senselessness of it. The donkey knew how to take care of its master. Balaam wasn't that smart. Proverbs 4:14 says, "Enter not into the path of the wicked and go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it and pass away." Balaam's walking right into trouble. Okay, Numbers 22, verse 31. "Then the Lord opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way, and his sword drawn in his hand. And he bowed down his head and fell flat on his face. And the angel of the Lord said unto him, Wherefore hast thou smitten thine ass these three times? Behold, I went out to withstand thee, because thy way is perverse before me. And the ass saw me and turned from me these three times. Unless she had turned from me, surely now also I had slain thee and saved her alive." So Balaam thinks the ass deserves to die. He wants to kill his donkey because she's mocked him. God says, "I would have killed you and saved her alive."
Right.
She's doing what she's supposed to. You're the one that's not. You're the one doing the mocking. And Balaam said unto the angel of the Lord, "I have sinned, for I knew not that thou stoodest in the way against me. Now therefore, if it displease thee, I will get me back again." Balaam said unto the angel of the Lord, "I have sinned." What kind of repentance is that? "For I knew not that thou stoodest in the way against me." Balaam's sorry he about got himself killed. Is Balaam sorry that he mocked God? No, I don't really think so. He just realizes, "I about got myself killed. God, I'm sorry." But there was no change of heart. However, God's doing something here. We'll talk about that in just a little bit, but let's read a few more verses. "And the angel of the Lord said unto Balaam, Go with the men, but only the word that I shall speak unto thee, that thou shalt speak. So Balaam went with the princes of Balak, and when Balak heard that Balaam was come, he went out to meet him unto the city of Moab, which is in the border of Arnon, which is in the utmost coast. Balak said unto Balaam, Did I not earnestly send unto thee to call thee? Wherefore camest thou not unto me? Am I not able indeed to promote thee to great honor? And Balaam said unto Balak, Lo, I came unto thee. Have I now any power at all to say anything? The word that God putteth in my mouth, that shall I speak." Now Balaam says that with the vision of an angel with a drawn sword fresh in his mind, knowing that he didn't see the angel, and the angel was there, and his donkey saw the angel, so he knows it was there. The angel told him these three times. Okay, so he knows why the donkey did what it did. The angel was there. And now here he is standing in front of Balak, and he remembers the angel with the drawn sword. So God did this on purpose. It's not just a rash move he made or just some, you know, vengeance. He did this to scare Balaam, so Balaam doesn't cross boundaries. So Balaam's got this fresh in his mind. Now, I think if Balaam had met the condition before he went, God would not have had to do this. But God sees an eagerness in Balaam for this reward. God knows he's going to have to trespass to get that reward. So God comes down to show Balaam, to wake him up. Chapter 23. "And Balaam said unto Balak, Build me here 7 altars, and prepare me here 7 oxen and 7 rams. Balak did as Balaam had spoken, and Balaam offered on every altar a bullock and a ram. And Balaam said unto Balak, stand by thy burnt offering, and I will go. Peradventure the Lord will come to meet me, and whatsoever he showeth me, I will tell thee. And he went to an high place. And God met Balaam and said unto him, this is Balaam talking to God, I have prepared 7 altars, and I have offered upon every altar a bullock and a ram. And the Lord put a word in Balaam's mouth, and said, return unto Balak, this thou shalt speak. And he returned unto him, and lo, he stood by his burnt sacrifice, he and all the princes of Moab. And he took up his parable and said, Balak, the king of Moab, hath brought me from Aram, out of the mountains of the east, saying, come, curse me, Jacob, and come, defy Israel. How shall I curse whom God hath not cursed? Or how shall I defy whom the Lord hath not defied? For from the top of the rock I see him, and from the hills I behold him. Lo, the people shall dwell alone, and shall not be reckoned among the nations. Who can count the dust of Jacob, and the number of the fourth part of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my last end be like his. And Balak said unto Balaam, what hast thou done unto me? I took thee to curse mine enemies, and behold, thou hast blessed them altogether. And he answered and said, must I not take heed to speak that which the Lord hath put in my mouth? Balak said unto him, come, I pray thee, with me unto another place, from whence thou mayest see them. And thou shalt see but the utmost part of them, and shall not see them all. And curse me them from thence. Now Balaam is in a tough spot. Balak is angry with him. If he pleases Balak, God will be angry with him. So they go to another place. They offer another 7 rams and 7 bullocks. What are they trying to do? Trying to manipulate God? Trying to persuade him? Trying to get him to come over to their side? If we offer more bullocks, more rams, maybe God will accept us and let us curse this people. Balaam is totally ignorant of what God is doing with this people. He's totally ignorant of the plan God has going on. But he just needed to obey. And in verse 19, this is after, the second time, Balaam says, God is not a man that he should lie, neither the son of man that he should repent. Hath he said, and shall he not do it? Or hath he spoken, and shall he not make it good? Balaam says that, but somehow he's still fighting against it. After this, they go and offer more sacrifices. But he said, behold, I have received commandment to bless, and he hath blessed, and I cannot reverse it. And then verse 21 there is very important. He hath not beheld iniquity in Jacob, neither hath he seen perverseness in Israel. The Lord his God is with him, and the shout of a king is among them. He hath not seen iniquity in Jacob, neither hath, or he hath not beheld iniquity in Jacob, neither hath he seen perverseness in Israel. That is important, and Balaam took note of that. Let's go on to chapter 24, down in verse 10. So this is after they've tried 3 times offering sacrifices, trying to get God to curse Israel. And Balak's anger was kindled against Balaam, and he smote his hands together. And Balak said unto Balaam, I called thee to curse mine enemies, and behold, thou hast altogether blessed them these 3 times. Therefore now flee thou to thy place. I thought to promote thee unto great honor. But lo, the Lord hath kept thee back from honor. Balaam said unto Balak, spake I not also to thy messengers which thou sendest unto me, saying, if Balak would give me his house full of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the commandment of the Lord? to do either good or bad of mine own mind. But what the Lord saith, that will I speak. And now behold, I go unto my people. Come therefore, and I will advertise thee what this people shall do to thy people in the latter days. And so, Balak doesn't rightly understand Balaam's God. He assumes he can be manipulated. He assumes if somehow he can get Balaam on his side, it will work. So he sends for Balaam, hoping to persuade Balaam and to change his mind. Balaam knew better. The fault's not on Balak. The fault is on Balaam. It's not, you know, Balak shouldn't have sent for Balaam. Balaam shouldn't have come. He knew it wasn't going to work. He knew God wouldn't be persuaded. But he was still hoping. So in verse 25 it says, Balaam rose up and went and returned to his place, and Balak also went his way. End of the story. So now we leave Balaam. In chapter 25, we go into another story. But we'll still find Balaam again. And Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab. And they called the people unto the sacrifice of their gods, and the people did eat and bowed down to their gods. And Israel joined himself unto Baal Peor, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. Remember, he had not beheld iniquity in Jacob, neither had he seen perverseness in Israel, or the other way around, however that was. Now Israel sinned. Now God is angry with them. And there was a plague, and 24,000 people died because of this. Numbers chapter 31, in verse 1, the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites. Afterward thou shalt be gathered unto thy people. And Moses spake unto the people, saying, arm some of yourselves unto the war, and let them go against the Midianites, and avenge the Lord of Midian. We'll skip on down to verse 7. And they warred against the Midianites, as the Lord commanded Moses, and they slew all the males. They slew also the kings of Midian, beside the rest of them that were slain, namely Evi and Rechem, Zur and Hur and Reba, five kings of Midian. Balaam also, the son of Beor, they slew with the sword. And down in verse 14, and Moses was wroth with the officers of the host, with the captains over thousands and captains over hundreds, which came from the battle. And Moses said unto them, have ye saved all the women alive? Behold, these caused the children of Israel, through the counsel of Balaam, to commit trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor, and there was a plague among the congregation of the Lord. Now I want you to take note of why Moses was angry. He says he was wroth because they had saved these people alive. Okay, this had caused the death of 24,000 of God's people. This matter. Moses wasn't angry because he hated these people, but because he loved the children of Israel. He loved God's people and God's program. And this had damaged it. But we also notice that this was done through the counsel of Balaam. Balaam betrayed God's people. He had this conflict. He wanted to please Balak. He wanted the reward badly. He also did not want to displease God. He remembered the angel with the drawn sword. He was in a tough spot. He put himself there, remember that. He wanted the reward, but he knew he couldn't curse him. He tried bribing God. That didn't work. And he said, wait a minute. God has not seen perverseness in Jacob, nor iniquity in Israel. There's a weak spot here. If you can exploit this weak spot, send the girls over. If you can get Israel to sin, God will punish them. You don't have to wipe them out. God will do it for you. You know, oftentimes the worst adversaries are those the closest to God's people. Because they have an understanding that the world doesn't. The world doesn't understand how God operates. But Balaam knew. Balaam knew if you can get these people to sin, God will punish them. What a despicable method. What a despicable character. And yet it's very alive and well today. God said, rejoice not when thy enemy stumbleth or falleth. What does that mean? There's sometimes conflict. And you understand, if the person in conflict with you trespasses, God will take care of them. So therefore, if you know, okay, why do people tear each other down? Why is it you try and make your brother or your sister look bad? Why do you slander them? Why is there slander of their character or you know, false witness? Why is it? Because you will be elevated by somebody else's demise. Somehow you have an advantage. There's something to gain if you could just get this other person out of your way. Balak told Balaam, I thought to promote thee to honor. Like honor. Wouldn't that be nice to have? Balaam coveted the reward, the honor, and the wealth. Okay, the things that could be had. If only these people weren't right with God. Okay, now, you may not want them to sin, but you try and make it look like they're not as good as what they claim. Have you ever seen anything like that? That spirit is very much alive and well. What are you doing? Mocking God? Setting yourself against His program? Betraying His people? Exploiting their weakness? What will God's cause gain by you doing this? But God's cause wasn't Balaam's big thing. It was that reward. Balaam knew he shouldn't go there, but he wanted to get a little closer. And then he got in a tough spot, and God's people were in the way. I think we see that a lot. Suddenly you want to tear down God's people. Suddenly you don't want them to succeed. Not in the same method that Balaam used, though that method is still alive, but in the same heart, the same attitude, wishing others to stumble for your own advantage. God says, but I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel. For his own advantage, Balaam teamed up with the world against God's people. Okay. What about the problem of trying to serve two masters? Didn't that problem come first? Before you betrayed God's people, there was something other than God's program that you were wanting. Balaam didn't understand all that was going on with the children of Israel, all that was happening there. Did he even know that God had promised this land to Abraham? I don't know. He didn't need to know. He knew what God said. God said this people is blessed. And that was enough. But because of his covetousness, because of his unfaithfulness, it caused his unfaithfulness to God. Rather than telling the princes why he couldn't go, he blamed it on God. Okay, what about when people ask you why you dress the way you do? Is it because the church says we have to? The reason you don't go the places you go, is it because, well, my parents won't let me? Or have you been given good reasons, but you just don't really want to share them? It would be much easier just to put the blame on somebody else. Just say, well, somebody else is making me do this, so. Yeah, they'll understand that, because they do things that people make them do too. But I do this because this is the way God said to do it, and this is the reasons he gave for doing it this way. They won't appreciate that. Where's your heart at? Are you actually wanting to see God's way forward? Or are you still trying to serve the two masters? You really want to go, and you're disappointed at the rules that God has set. So rather than actually giving the reason, which is good reason, I mean, God has blessed these people, therefore I won't curse them. Rather than actually giving the good reason, you just try and push the blame off. Are you ready to give an answer for the hope that lieth in you? Are you ready to defend what you do? Or are you just going to try and push the blame off? Are you really trying to forward God's cause? He's blessed these people. That's good. We have an entire nation under God's blessing. That's great. Why would you try and mess that up? Because somehow I allowed myself to want something, and this got in the way. You allowed your heart to want what God said no to. It wasn't wrong to have the reward or to have the honor, but what was necessary to get it, that was wrong. How many people have justified themselves by saying, it's not wrong for me to have this? Is it right for you to get it? Is there a proper way to obtain it? If there's not, then you can't have it. And don't try to get any closer. Jesus said, no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. And I think that oftentimes there is a lot of unnecessary stress by people trying to serve both masters. God tells them what to do. God gives them a reason. Yeah, but did he really say that? Why? Because it'd be really convenient if there was something else. Maybe if we're really good, God will change his mind. Maybe if we offer the appropriate sacrifice, maybe God will see it differently. You may just wind up blinded by your pride and covetousness, setting yourself against God's program. You think God's going to stop his program? The promise he made to Abraham, the promise he made of a coming Savior, you think he's going to stop it because your people get, his people get in your way? When you let your heart go astray, you set yourself up to get in the way of God. There's a reason that Balaam was killed with the kings of Moab.
The doctrine of Balaam was one thing that we see in the book of Revelation. God said that there are those in the churches who hold the doctrine of Balaam, along with the Nicolaitans. Interesting that even though Balaam is such a secluded little incident there in the Old Testament, Peter mentions it, and then John in Revelation also mentions it, that Balaam pulled a fast one. He realized if he could counsel the king of Midian and Moab, and God had told Israel to leave Moab alone, but Moab was united with Midian, and but he counseled them, if you can beguile the children of Israel into idolatry, fornication, and all that goes with the heathen idolatry, God will destroy them. He thought he was pretty smart. Why does it mention that twice in the New Testament? Three times, actually. A couple times there in Revelation 2 and 3. Is it possible that the devil still uses that tactic? No doubt. So the Midianites and Moabites, instead of going against Israel in battle, they became friends. We just want to be friendly. It's all about love. A false love. A false definition of love. We just want to, we want to be friends, and we want there to be love and peace and joy, and we want to accept you, and we want you to accept us, and we just want everybody to be happy. Do we hear that same garbage today? God said to Israel, smite the Midianites, they are vexing you with their wiles. We have a society today that is trying to push all kinds of perversion in our society. Right in our, you know, just trying, and they are upset if we act intolerant. We're not being amiable. We're not being accepting. We're not supportive of this and that and so forth. And they say that they're hurt and they're damaged if we don't accept them. But then if we say, no, we believe this, they don't mind hurting and damaging to not accept us. It's a messed up mentality, but they're using the exact same tactic that the Midianites and the Moabites used. Beware the doctrine of Balaam. It's very alive. The idea of, we want love. Do you know love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, and temperance, the fruit of the Spirit? If it's not in the context of God's law, every one of those can be vile and perverse and wrong. Every one of those can be repositioned, reapplied by the devil in a very anti-God, wicked way. The only cure for that type of wile is a sword. God set up human government so that the sword would be applied to the pervert, the homo, the LGBTQ, and that would be eliminated from society. The problem is our government is so committed to them, we're the ones who are going to feel the sword as things continue to progress, because we're not supportive and accepting and so forth. Brothers and sisters, we need to be wise to the wiles of the devil. He wants to turn everything on its head and make good evil and evil good, make the Israelites look like the bad guys. They were the ones killed. We just invited them to our feast. We invited them. We were just being friendly. And they love war. They wanted war. We were being so nice. Are you stumbled by that? Are you so short-sighted that that kind of vernacular draws you in? If you are feeling for the Democrats and the perverts pushing their ideas in our society, then you're about as dumb as Israel listening to Moab. You've got to be smarter than what Israel was. You've got to see the invitation and the sweet words and the nice philosophical sayings of the Midianites and the Moabites. You've got to see it for what it is. And you've got to hate evil and love righteousness, or you're going to be drawn in all in the name of goodwill and peace and love. You're going to be drawn in under the wrath of God. Let's stand together. Thank you, Brother Philip, for bringing that forth to us. We see it all around us. I get so disgusted in Christendom with the false love. Oh, you don't want to be judgmental. Judge not. You know, that's not the love of Christ. We're supposed to have all this false idea of love. Understand, the God of love said, slay the Midianites and the Moabites. They vex you with their wiles. Kill them. That was the God of love. Okay? Satan would like it to be turned around to where the Midianites and Moabites were being loving. Of course, if there's no values, if there's no laws concerning morality and propriety, then the Midianites and Moabites were the loving ones. But when God's law comes into view, the Midianites and the Moabites were perverts, beguiling you into idolatry, fornication, and it obviously left Israel with some STDs. Okay? There was some sort of plague, there was some sort of disease there, that even in the days when they confronted the tribe of Manasseh and Reuben and Manasseh and the half-tribe of Reuben and Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh had built a pile of stones just for symbolism, just as a testimony. Phinehas comes out there and confronts them. They're going to go to war. And what he says to them is something about, you remember Peor, of which we are not cleansed even to this day. There was some sort of STDs passed. There was some sort of disease that they got from messing around with these whores. And they still had it among them that they hadn't been cleansed from. It was still vexing them to some degree. God's way of purity and holiness is the only way. Any other path, I don't care what kind of label you put on it, love, grace, mercy, acceptance, whatever false front you put on it, all other ways go to hell. God will not be bribed or altered by human perspective. Any thoughts before we close?
Well, I thought it's interesting that Balak offered Balaam, promoting him to great honor. And Balaam got that, but for a very short amount of
right.
time. And now we despise him. I mean, it's like, what a bad end to come to.
It's a bad word. But I don't think people would even name their dog Balaam unless they didn't like it.
But he had that honor for just a short amount of time. It'd be much better if he would have been able to disdain that and actually obtain a lasting honor.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be more honorable to be his donkey than to be Balaam. Might be a good name for a pig. Yeah, that honor was very fleeting, wasn't it?
There's quite an opportunity you had, though. The leader of this nation was desperate. And I don't know what the Lord would have done if he would have counseled him, told him. The reason Israel is blessed, and or what he knew about it, Israel's blessed. Obviously, he knew that sin wasn't in Israel, and that's why Israel is blessed. And so, instead of trying to curse them, why don't you ask the Lord for a blessing? Mm-hmm. And Noah goes with that. And so, you're offering all these bullocks and all this, and you're asking for permission to curse someone else. I think that's a very warped perspective. Why don't we just ask the Lord for a blessing? And I think if Moab had, or Balak had responded the way that the king of Nineveh had, we would see a different outcome there.
Exactly. The problem is Moab and Midian were not interested in submitting to the God of Israel. They had their own God, their own way, and they just wanted their own way. Yeah, if the elders of Midian and Moab said, "Hey, would this great God, this God that you serve, would he accept us? I mean, how could we get right with this God?" The Lord would have gladly showed them.
It's interesting that Balak saw Israel and he panicked. Moab was in no danger. But when he did, got him in danger. By panicking, he made the wrong choice.
Right. Moab and Ammon were children of Lot. And God had helped Moab up to this point get where they were. Did they acknowledge him and honor him? No.
Yeah, I took warning the fact that Balaam, God says, you know, if he had just listened to God right off the bat and stuck with it and been clear about it, it wasn't going to get any easier after that. And how he kept pushing it, and God's like, okay, go a little bit. You're never going to get that gold with my blessing. You're never going to be able to get it rightly. You're never going to get to do what you want to do, but you think you want to do it so bad. And so he keeps pushing it and gets himself in tighter and tighter and tighter, and until he eventually blew it. And if you're pushing it with God and you really just like you want this to be God's will, and you know it's not, the easiest time to quit is now. Just quit. You keep pushing it, and God's not necessarily going to keep you out of more temptation or more desire or anything like that. You things might open up. You might slowly worm your way in until you're going to your own damnation. You're going to your own defeat. And if he just quit right then, it would have been the easiest time it was ever going to be. But he wasn't determined to let it down. I mean, he was determined not to let it down.
It's interesting. Moab was a child of Lot. Midian was from Keturah, I believe, from Abraham. And Jethro was a priest of Midian. And I believe that all comes down from Abraham through Keturah, if I'm not mistaken. So Moab could have had the faith of Abraham. Midianites could have had the faith of Abraham. They could have welcomed. In fact, God judged them for not welcoming Israel when coming out of Egypt. It's amazing how selfishness can get us in a bind and cause us to self-destruct. If we were praying to have the benevolence and be in tune with God, how much, I mean, Midian, Moab, Ammon, Edom, they could have all joined with Israel for the glory of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Instead, they failed. Let's pray.
Our Father in heaven, we thank you for bringing us together today. We thank you for the words that you